There's actually Fabiana will not be here tonight, but I don't know about Lucia Ronk, if anybody's heard. No. Natalie, can you just text him and see if he's jumping on? Get started, and if Legislator Ronk joins, and I'll come out on the end there. I'd like to call the June 14th meeting of Ways and Means to order. Can I have a motion for approval of the minutes of the May 10th and May 17th meetings?
I'll move it.
Second. Chair Bartels, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. Presentation on the SUNY Ulster budget. Ms. Capuano. You're on mute. You're still on mute.
There we go. Sorry about that. So I don't know, Dr. L, if you wanted to go first and then have me jump in.
Yeah, let me do the fun part, then you can get to the money.
Okay. Thanks, Dr. L.
You're welcome. I'm going to share my screen, if that's okay.
Yeah, great.
Did that work? Everybody see that? Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to our Board of Trustees and our foundation. They've been truly remarkable in allowing us to do the things that we've done over the years. And it's every chance I get to say thank you, I get to do that. But tonight, my special thanks goes to you guys. It's been incredible how, you know, this is, I'm finishing the seventh year, and I can't think of an ask that wasn't supported. So I just want to thank you and the county executive, Mike before Pat, but everybody has been great in the financial. If you look at our campus, you've invested about over $20 million. It's a new face up here. You know, we have water, we have new ceilings, the air conditioning, the ventilation. It's really a new place, and I certainly appreciate everything you've done. I'm certain our whole staff, including Jamie, who stole from you guys, appreciates it. What I thought I'd do is just cover a couple of the highlights that I'd like to share that we've been up to. First of all, there's 64 campuses in the SUNY system. And the chancellor 2 years ago had asked every student to consider doing this. And that would be to write, compose, and videotape themselves one statement. What does it mean to them to be SUNY for all? And out of these roughly 500,000 students we had, they chose Sophie Temple, who was our SUNY Ulster student. And I'm going to show you the short video clip that she put together that was accepted as the number one, and it was shared throughout the SUNY system in the state. So here's Sophie Temple giving you what she thinks SUNY for all is.
What does SUNY for all mean to me? It means opportunities, a chance for any of us to succeed. The art student, the science nerd, the future doctors and lawyers, the next great novelists and award-winning musicians, the up-and-coming politicians, the inventors who are going to change the world, and every possible thing in between. Every gender, race, religion, and sexuality, everyone has their stories that they bring with them, and every story impacts the world differently. When those stories come together, that's when change becomes possible, and maybe change is the biggest success of all. Some make changes that spread across the globe and alter the course of history. Some may only change one single life. An opportunity for a homeschooled girl from Kingston who grew up wanting two things: to be smart and to positively impact others. For her to go to a SUNY school, that's what SUNY for all means to me.
Well, we're very proud of Sophie, you know, and that's just one of our many graduates who have excelled. Just brings tears to my eyes to know that she could do that. She was a homeschool. She came here early. I think she came here 16 years old. And 2 years, she just, you know, she was on Senate, our faculty Senate, and she just was great. Something that we like to talk about, and that we are the number one community college in the state for the second year in a row. And that has a lot to do with the contributions and support we get from our community and from the legislature. So thank you for allowing us that. And we certainly, every time we get a chance, we share that news, because it's really important to all of us to know that we've excelled to that point. A couple things I just like to stress all the time is, you know, our mission has not changed, and it will not change. We are open access, which means, you know, virtually you can be a high school dropout, you can be a college graduate. We offer everyone the opportunity to attend. We're comprehensive. That means we're not a two-year transfer. We do workforce training. We do workforce non-training. We do a whole array of police academy. We do over 60 programs, so we're very adapt and attuned to what the community is doing, and we're flexible. You know, if things change, we're there. And another thing that we really are proud of is that we are in the top 100 as affordability in the country. Now, the U.S. Department of Education does an annual survey of affordability, and there's 1,400 schools throughout the country. And we are in the top 100, the only community college in the state to do that. And you might wonder why, because our tuition is mid-range. We're below the average, but we're still considered one of the most affordable. And the reason is because our foundation provides enough support that 70% of our students leave 2 years with no debt at all. Now, this is the first year that we've reached this goal. When I first got here 7 years ago, we gave $220,000 in scholarships. This year, we're going to give $1 million in scholarships for the first time. And that's going to be the theme going forward, you know, to continue to provide that support. But the support comes from the people that your neighbors, your friends, your relatives. It's our local Ulster County community that does that, provides us that opportunity to step up and do the things that are unique that are different than other community colleges. Our challenge, and Jamie is going to talk about this in a minute, you're going to hear enrollment. Enrollment has, on a national basis, dropped about 20% for community colleges and technical schools. The unique thing, and we all are facing this on a national level, is the number of students has not changed that much. Think about that. We're still serving close to the same number of students, but those students are part-time. The ratio of the number of students that are full-time to part-time has gone 50-50, which means we actually show FTEs at a reduction. So it looks like we're down in FTEs, but we're not down in headcount. And the thing Jamie will show you is that we have the same number of students. They require the same amount of services if they're part-time or if they're full-time. So you can just see the burden that puts when we're drawing money from the state on the number of FTEs. So Jamie will go into more detail on that. But our goal here is to change them back to full-time. And unfortunately, with the economy being the way it is, there's jobs for anybody who wants them. And unfortunately, some of our students are doing it. They're taking those jobs. The thing that I like to talk about, my favorite thing I like to talk about, is the President's Challenge Scholarship. And we have continued to grow. We just today finished awarding another 50 scholarships. So now we're up to 250 eighth graders, high school students, that are members of the special group of the President's Challenge. Here's a snapshot of 2 years ago. There was about 120
bars.
So
I don't.
I think somebody's is not muted. Anyway, here's just a few of the faces. You know, I've been fortunate.
Yeah, my red dad. Yes.
I attend most of the interviews, and I get to know these kids on the
side. There are. I'll show you awesome where the box.
There's about 50 of them right there. That was the first couple of years, but now we're up to 250, and it's kind of special. What we've been able to do, and my goal is to take this program will be at full capacity next year at 300. I committed to the foundation to be the spokesman even after I go into retirement, so I will continue to work with this group, and I'm actually going to bring it on a statewide level, so I'm excited about the future. I just want to show you the recruitment film that we show, that we send out to the school districts, because the school districts have agreed to be our partner in this. And they show this to every eighth grade class to try to let them, you know, bait them a little bit. Say, you know, this is the kind of opportunities that are available at SUNY Ulster. And, you know, the unique thing that I like to share with people, it's not just, you know, we'll have 300 students who are economically disadvantaged, first time in college, diamonds in the rough. These are special kids, but it's more than 300 kids, because they all have siblings and they all have friends and we're in those schools, we're in the public schools and we're in the rooms and we're talking to everybody. So it's taken us a number of years to get to where we are, but we got a flood of students who we've already captured in high school that'll be with us. So there's a double success to this. One is we're helping a population who certainly, I'm telling you, really need it. But we're also recruiting all students in the county, which it seems to work out pretty well. Show you a short video. This is our recruitment video that we sent to the high schools.
Over the last 4.5 years, we've had a lot of success. And I think out of all the things we've done, the thing that's been most successful and I'm most proud of is the President's Challenge Scholarship. It's a unique program where we're going after eighth graders and we're changing lives.
We have so many students who are brilliant and capable and full of unlocked potential.
They come on campus, they're getting the college ID, they're attending classes, they're coming to special events. They are SUNY Ulster students in ninth grade.
This will help so much in my future, and thank you so, so much.
Can't believe I'm getting to go to college.
This is really going to change my life.
It's always been a dream for me to go to college on a scholarship.
Welcome, everybody. We're excited to connect with you today. So once you're here, your tuition for SUNY Ulster is covered by the scholarship.
For some students, it's really uplifting their entire family. Now, the next generation of their families will see that, hey, I can do that too.
The President's Challenge Scholarship lifts the student, it lifts the family, and it lifts our entire community.
This year, we'll be awarding scholarships to another 50 students.
And that's what I have tonight. And now I'm going to stop sharing and give it to Jamie, and she's going to be covering the part we probably allocated. So anyway, Jamie, I'll turn this off and good luck.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Al. So 1 second. Okay. Can everybody see that screen? It's not as pretty as Dr. Al's, but I promise it'll still be as informative. So jumping in, the budget reflects zero layoffs. Again, as we've talked about before, that's a big commitment that we've made on our campus. We made that throughout the pandemic. Some campuses did go through layoffs and retrenchments. We did not, and we stayed true to that. The budget does reflect savings that were achieved through retirement incentive that was recently offered, and we had several faculty members who did take that, some senior faculty members. So we do reflect that retirement incentive in the budget. We also are reflecting a reduction in adjunct staffing levels that is reflective of a decline in enrollment. As we look at our enrollment numbers going into the spring semester, we'll certainly be tracking that. But again, as enrollment does reduce, we do anticipate a reduction in our adjunct staffing levels. The budget also does include several targeted initiatives, really focused, as Dr. Al said, at student retention and enrollment. We do have enhanced staffing levels within our Office for Accessibility Service, and that office deals with all of our students who are coming in who need accommodations. We're seeing a large increase in student need for accommodations, so we do have more robust services being offered through that department. The budget also continues several shared service initiatives that will reduce operational costs overall. We have a shared service initiative with SUNY. This is a shared service for our chief information officer, and we also have server hosting offered through SUNY. We are also continuing our shared service initiative with the county for county purchasing services. In terms of the total operating budget, our total operating budget is $24.4 million, as you see on this chart. That is a decrease of $2.9 million. That reduction is mostly tied to the federal stimulus funds. We had to use federal stimulus funding for COVID-19 related expenses. So we have COVID-19 mandated testing, social distancing measures, as well as classroom and equipment upgrades, really to be able to do that remote platforms. The current budget does include $1.4 million in federal funds, and that's going to be to complete some remaining projects. We're going to be doing mental health wraparound services for students. Again, that's another area that we feel we really need to focus on as students come back to campus. So in terms of a revenue, as we have talked about before, the state did approve the floor funding model. This provides the same level of state aid that was provided in 21-22. It does represent, in essence, a maintenance of effort, but that is based on a year when enrollment was reduced. So this model, again, has not been established in permanent law. We are hopeful that the state and the governor's office will include this within permanent law in the near future. The budget reflects $6.4 million in the county share, that is the maintenance of effort component. And the budget does reflect a tuition increase of $100 per semester on a full-time basis and $10 per credit on a part-time basis. Again, this modest tuition increase, as Dr. Al said, will be offset by additional tuition assistance programs. And again, the scholarships that's being offered through the foundation. The state did announce this year an expansion in the TAP program. So TAP will be eligible for part-time students. And the other federal Pell Awards will also be increasing this year. That part-time Pell component also does recognize workforce programs. So as Dr. Al said, that's a big initiative that SUNY Ulster focuses on. So that's gonna be enhanced TAP awards for students who are enrolling in those workforce programs. And it's also important to note that the Excelsior program tuition rate will reboot this year. That's gonna align with our 22-23 tuition rate. So this will eliminate what's referred to as the Excelsior gap, which really is the gap between the actual tuition rate and the tuition rate that's been approved through the state for charge for that program. So doing a quick financial aid analysis, it's really important to note, as Dr. L said before, 80% of SUNY Ulster students receive financial support through grants and scholarships. We have TAP, Pell, part-time TAP will also increase that number. And as Dr. L said, the foundation is offering $1 million in scholarships, which is a huge increase from what they provided in the past to really support our students. So we did take a look at our tuition rate and compare it against others within the state and within our region. So taking a look at our tuition rate and other colleges, the 22-23 tuition rate of $5,080 is below the statewide average of $5,115 and is directly in line with our regional average of $5,081. SUNY Ulster's tuition rate will remain the third lowest in the region behind Dutchess and Westchester. So as Dr. L was talking about, looking at the enrollment numbers, our budget does reflect a 16% decrease in enrollment. This reduction really is tied to that shift into the part-time, students shifting into part-time as we emerge from the pandemic. This trend has been continuing throughout all community colleges and reflecting an average decrease of 13% overall throughout SUNY. And it's also reflective of national trends in enrollment. We do, whenever we do our budgets, when we're looking at the revenue, obviously we always want to be conservative on the estimate. We have looked at this number several times and feel that this reduction in enrollment is warranted given that continued shift we're seeing into the part-time basis. So looking at, again, just a snapshot, looking at 2019, in 2019-20, we had approximately 37% of our students enrolled part-time, whereas 63% were on a full-time basis. In 22-23, we expect this shift to be a flat 50-50 split. And really the students are working and going to college. So we're really starting to see that shift where the students are out in the workforce while also attending college. And we do, as Dr. L said, we receive less state aid on an FTE basis for part-time students, but our staff still provide the same level of support and services to all students who come into SUNY Ulster. So this is just looking at the every student versus a typical SUNY Ulster student, just to give kind of a sense on how they progress through SUNY Ulster. So every student who comes into SUNY Ulster will be served by admissions, financial aid, student accounts, public safety, health services, and the registrar. And you'll find that at most campuses. SUNY Ulster students, though, typically are served by at least 10 offices. The state aid formula, however, only provides a fraction of state aid for each part-time student. So just to give a quick example, if a student enrolled with us for 6 credits, they'll generate about $600 in state aid. While a full-time student will receive the same level of services, they'll generate around $3,000 in state aid. And as we continue to see that shift to the part-time student basis, those students tend to have higher need levels, and they tend to come through needing more services from our offices. And as Dr. L said as well, some of the budget and recruitment initiatives that were ongoing, the budget does reflect enrollment initiatives and targeted, really looking at how to retain the students. We are working with our student services offices, and we found that through the pandemic, students really wanted more flexibility. They wanted to be able to meet us remotely after hours, before hours, on the weekends. So we're working with our enrollment team to really make that happen, kind of meeting the students where they are. We're also very excited to get back in person and get recruitment efforts back out to the schools and all the areas where we used to have a really face-to-face presence. We find that students tend to enroll and actually go through the enrollment process with us when they have us there to help them and they have a face to a name. And our enrollment team also just launched a new recruitment campaign called You're In. So this initiative will be sent to all Ulster County high school seniors announcing their acceptance to SUNY Ulster. Within each senior's packet, they'll also receive next steps to outline how to finalize their enrollment pathway. So again, all eyes, as Dr. L said, on enrollment and recruitment and retention, really keeping our students with us as they continue through that first year into that second year. And with that, any questions?
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions? Legislator Walter?
Thanks. So first one, last year you spoke about developing a partnership, I think it was with Maris, to do a pipeline, was it an RN-BSN? Now I'm not fully remembering if it was a social work pipeline, a nursing pipeline, or both, but I feel like there was an RN-BSN relationship you were looking into. Yeah, and I'm curious how it's going. And
we just finalized the MOA with them, and they'll be starting classes in the fall. And we've had one with Empire with the nursing program. So they actually do the RN to the BSN remotely with us. So we have two pipelines, one for human services and the other is for nursing.
Oh, so it's both. So yeah. So for BSNs and for MSW or BSW?
No, MSW.
And that agreement, Legislator Walters, is with Adelphi. So Adelphi will be on campus in the fall.
Legislator Green? You're on mute, Legislator Green.
I'd like to commend the excellent work, especially for priority students from priority communities and households. I'm very proud of that work. I have a question about food waste and the cafeteria. We here in Ulster County, the legislature passed a food waste diversion law. And the last time I checked, the cafeteria was, because of COVID, was not really operating, or maybe operating in a very limited manner. But I do want to be sure that the college sets a good example. So I don't know what the status of food waste generation is. It's handled so beautifully at SUNY New Paltz, at least in the dorms and, you know, the cafeterias. It's harder in the food court. But I just wondered, and I understand the college doesn't have dorms, so, but I just would like an update on that, the status of food and food waste.
Sure, so I can respond on that one. We are in contract with Blackboard Bistro. They run out of the Rosendale Municipal Center, so they contract with us for food service. So I'll certainly go back to them to ensure that they're compliant with all of the food waste disposal rules and that was outlined in the law. We are still at a reduced capacity operation within our food sector. The students are really kind of coming on of the remote platforms and they're not on campus all day as they typically used to be. So we're still seeing a significant reduction in food, food access, if you will, but I'll certainly follow up with them, Legislator Green, and get back to you as soon as possible on how they're handling all of the food waste and all of the composting measures.
And congratulations on using a local business. Last time I checked on this, it was, I forget which service, but it was essentially a national service.
Yes. Yeah, so we were very happy that Blackboard Bistro was willing and they were a great partner with us throughout COVID. Frankly, the old company was not working out during COVID. They were not looking to continue operations and Blackboard Bistro was amazing, stepped up, and we're very happy to have them on campus. They've been a great partner.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. I
Absolutely.
Look forward to your answer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Anybody else? All right. Thank you both for the presentation. And, we'll continue on. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Resolution number 11, requesting enactment of State and Senate Assembly Bill for the Hotel and Motel Occupancy Tax. Can I have a motion? Actually, can I have a motion to postpone until next week?
I'll move to postpone until next week.
Second?
I'll second.
Chair Bartels, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Okay. 168, authorizing one-time reimbursement for Ulster County real property taxpayers. Can I have a motion?
I'll move for postponement.
Second. Can the State of Cahill, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. 288.
I think Natalie was trying to chime in.
All right, Natalie.
I just wanted to clarify if that was a motion to postpone for 1 week or one month.
1 week.
Okay.
280, requiring reporting of wages for employees and contractors. We have a motion as amended presented for you.
A move for discussion.
Second.
Discussion. Mr. Rock.
I mean, I'm no more supportive of this now than I was last month or the month before. So, I mean, I'm ready to move forward personally on a no vote. I'm not sure what everyone else is up for, if we want to move it forward or if we want to postpone it. But just want to make my feelings clear.
Are you still?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that everyone has the amended version, just removing the word good, so it's really just services. This is something in conversation with the procurement department, with the director of procurement, to just narrow it to the actual, you know, service work rather than, you know, buying creams of paper or something. So that's what's in the packet, because I just got it today myself and forwarded it. Okay. Yeah, I mean, and just while I've got the microphone, you know, I'll just say I am surprised that this is so controversial for some. I think for most of us, it's not, and I would be happy to see us vote this forward tonight.
Happy to take it, Ryan.
Thank you, Legislator Uchitel, for agreeing to some of those amendments. There was one that we did not include that I would ask the committee to entertain. And that's just removing any reference to certified payrolls in this resolution. I think that is a step that we do not need to go. I think we can gather the information via contract. We can do forms associated with our contracts to get payroll information without requiring the companies to submit certified payrolls. And I believe Legislator Uchitel was okay with that in our conversations as well.
Well, I'd like to hear what Legislator Uchitel has to say about that, but I also want to understand why you wouldn't want to see certified payroll, again, once someone's contracted with us.
It's not something that a lot of vendors are required to do. I mean, right now in the labor sector, they're required on capital project, any public work project, to do a certified payroll, but other vendors just aren't, and service providers aren't used to doing a certified payroll as is required by public works, you know, construction contractors. So I just don't want to confuse what we're actually looking for. I think what we're looking for is the payroll information without something being technically certified.
There you go. You're on mute.
Yep, thank you. I'm open to that. You know, for the reason that it'll, you know, I want this to be easy for vendors. I think, you know, the certified payroll perhaps is a, you know, an added burden. I can see the value of it because it's the only way to know for sure. However, I think it's, you know, I'm comfortable with them submitting their intent, you know, based on basically removing that requirement removes all personally identifiable information from this. So it basically says what they pay these roles individually, not what they pay the people individually, or not necessarily what they pay the roles individually. It could be what they pay the roles in aggregate. We're not aggregate, but in you know, by role. And they might have multiple, you know, if there's multiple case managers and they are all getting paid, you know, within a range, and they put that range down there, I'm comfortable with that. And I'm comfortable with it, you know, with the only information that we're recording, that we're retaining, being that information. I think that would be a huge step forward. I realize that even that step forward might be uncomfortable for some, particularly as we're coming out of a period of, you know, fiscal, you know, conservative kind of mindset, moving a lot of things to the private sector. I'm not saying that, you know, needs to be reversed. I'm just saying I really want to see what's going on and how much folks are getting paid when they're working for the county, when they're working with our constituents. And I think that that's, you know, it's a matter of what's right. And I encourage folks to have an open mind to that.
Walter.
Thanks. So through the chair to Legislator Uchitel, can you just help me visualize sort of how we would be able to use these data going forward, like what you specifically see us being able to take this and in order to make either policy decisions or financial decisions.
Yeah, if I may, Chair Gamers, it would give us visibility into what the roles that we are, we're already looking at contracts that say what work is being performed. This would then say who's, what roles are performing that work and what are those roles being paid so that we can make decisions about, how we're spending county resources to help our constituents. I mean, there's a case to be made for wanting to make sure that, people are earning a living wage, even though I didn't include that in this specific legislation and the requirements of that. We've had, a number of pieces of legislation that I think this information would have been helpful to have. And even if we can't agree on what people should be paid at this time, I think we'll have to agree on that somewhere down the road. And I'd like to start collecting that information today.
Can I follow up on that?
Yes.
I guess I'm just wondering, because if we have the amount for a position, but we don't know, like, for example, how many hours that person does or anything else, we won't be able to determine what their pay rate is. So, it's not that I have anything against this. I just like to see what tangibly we'll be able to take this and what kinds of specific decisions we could be making from this.
Do you mind, John, if I...
Yeah.
So the form that I think I shared with you previously and that I've shared with the procurement department as an example, which is basically the same information that the state collects. So we know that there's precedent for this in the public sector. And it also includes the percent. So it takes the role and the percent that role is engaged on this contract. So you would be able to basically do the math and figure out what percent of that salary is going to this. I think it could be, it might be helpful to clarify if it's full-time or part-time or, the number of hours. I believe a lot of that is already in the contract language in many of these cases, particularly, if it's depending on the contract, but again, this is not a novel thing. This is something that the state already collects, and I don't believe is too onerous, and I think would be very helpful.
Mr. Walker, you're good. Chair Bertos?
Well, thank you. So I see that it still allows for us to audit, so we have that backup protection if we have a question. And again, I just want to clarify that this is only if the contract is awarded. This is not at the level of responding to a contract. It's just once the contract's awarded, they're going to have to submit payment information. Is there, I saw Deputy Executive Ryder nod his head, so I'm assuming that's a yes, just for awardees. So my question then is, are we able to, if there's a concern that we're not actually going to, or it's going to take some level of effort to discern what people are actually getting paid, can we be, rather than certified payroll, is there a way to be specific about what we're asking for in either an hourly way or a salary way so that we know what, based on the job description, specifically people are getting paid short of a certified payroll?
Deputy Executive Ryder?
I believe the form that has been shared and maybe I know Ed is having the attorneys tweak it, and it would just be like a, on our contracts, it would be like a Schedule D after the insurance. When they turned in the signed copy of the contract, they'd have to fill out the form. I believe that it actually aggregates, like it has individual people assigned to the work and their salary and their percentage towards the work. So I actually don't think it's taking everything and putting it together. I think it's individuals, which I think would answer that question. I also wanted to go back. And I, you know, this is a requirement that this information be turned, you know, over to us and then turned over to the legislative clerk within 30 days. I still believe that there's some kind of requirement in the regular living wage law that was passed last year that also has to do with some kind of opportunity to request certified payrolls and audits that can be done, and this doesn't impact that. So you are still going to be able to get some audited information that's a little bit more drilled down if you request it.
Can I just ask a follow-on question through you, Chair, to Deputy Executive Ryder? And that's, are you suggesting that the 30 days might be too tight?
No. Sorry, okay. That's not what I was saying at all.
Okay.
I was just saying this resolution just says that it must be submitted with the contracts, and then we have to turn it over within 30 days. But there's other requirements in the living wage law, if I remember, that this doesn't impact.
Sarah?
Thank you. I'd just like to be added, please, as a co-sponsor for this.
Anybody else? All right, I'll just say, I said it at the, we talked about, last month, you know, there's, to me, this is a privacy issue that without any good solution to the FOIL ability for people to get these records, I just don't see it. I don't see the benefit outweighing the negative impact. And, you know, we are a county of small businesses, not large industry for the most part. And it's going to be pretty hard to blur position and person with this law. So I'm going to be a no on it. Nothing else then. As amended, all those in favor? 3 opposed? 2 opposed. Okay. And then motion for as amended. Okay. To approve.
What are you asking, Chair?
Well, we just made the amendment, so now we got to approve.
Oh, I'll make a motion on the resolution as amended.
Okay, second. All right, all those in favor? Opposed? I'll be opposed as well, so 2 opposed. All right, motion carried. Thank you. Resolution 290, amending the county budget to include federal aid funding from mental health and school program. Can I have a motion? Chair Walter, second. Legislator Cahill, discussion? All those in, Legislator Walter?
Thanks. So this speaks to this resolution and the next resolution. This is similar to things I brought up in public health. You may or may not know, I was the only no. I am so supportive of this program in every way, shape, and form, except for one. I think it's great in concept. I think what we're doing in the schools is terrific. I'll try to be simple in expressing what my current concerns are, just so that others can understand it. For me, I'm so excited that we have a Department of Mental Health and have the capacity to undo what we've done many years ago, where it dismantled our mental health department by contracting out to other third-party organizations to deliver the mental health care. And we saw that didn't work. And so I'm so thrilled to be able to rebuild our mental health department. And so what concerns me is the fact that this continues the previous practice of providing $1 million to a third-party organization to deliver the services. And I'll just say a little bit about why. I think about this is something that we want to do well and we want to do continuously. We don't want to put the work into doing this and getting social workers into the school and then in a year they're gone. We want this to be successful and run for as long as we possibly can afford it. which I hope is a very long time because it has a great bang for its buck. So either we decide we want to continue to give $1 million to a third party company to run this, or we need to think about how do we make this something that's our own. And so what I worry is by having this third party company doing this, as opposed to taking that $1 million and just spending it here and us running this, is we won't know how to define what kind of experience we require of these social workers. We won't know necessarily how many kids are being served. We won't know how to best integrate this into the schools and what are the challenges to integrating it. There's social workers in the schools, and how do they work together and how shouldn't they work together? We won't know whether 2 social workers per school is necessarily the right number or not. We won't know if families or schools are feeling underserved. We also, I have a concern, like if we're offering this company $1 million, we have a crisis right now where we can't hire social workers. Across New York State, it's been extremely challenging. So what happens if they can't hire the 10 social workers? Like, are we not paying them $1 million? Is this a reimbursal? There's often these grant programs that's based on the number of kids served and not on a blanket amount, because they probably won't be able to get the 10 social workers. They're going to lose social workers in the middle. How are the decisions made that if they only get 5 social workers, which schools should get the services, which schools shouldn't get the services? What if someone quits in the middle and there's a gap? How is the decision made on how those gaps get filled? How do we transition this to being something we're offering? And so I feel like by us using the same money, which is our taxpayer money, even if it's through, we've got opioid settlement money and ARP money, if we do it and we're operating it, then we can know all those things, that we can be on top of it and in charge of it. We can roll it out in a meaningful way. Maybe we're not going to get 10 social workers, so maybe it's a smaller type of rollout. We have Thomasina in mental health, who is a social worker who can serve as that supervisor. But I just feel like, one, it leaves us in the dark. It doesn't allow us to really protect our, you know, to be sure that we're giving the services that we want. And it doesn't allow for the clean transition to us doing this. So I feel like if you're fellow legislators okay with just continually having a third party deliver this for us, then this is fine. But if it's some, if there is the hope that we are ultimately delivering this care, then this is something we should be building ourselves, because we are not going to be able to, it just doesn't smoothly work into that kind of transition. I'll also say that social workers hired by nonprofit companies do not get paid the same way that they do when they work for government. I know several social workers who have left their nonprofit jobs and are sad about wanting to be able to work for government, because not only is the salary, but the fringe is stronger. So it's also building that social work workforce. I'm excited that the community college is getting that underway. But we have a lot of potential social workers right here in our county that we could support. But I would like us to support them. I like them to be our staff, so that we could make sure that this is the best service possible for our kids and has true sustainability. So I'm not in favor of this in terms of the RFP to a third party. I am in favor of the program in every other way that it is described.
I apologize. I did not update my agenda. So Deputy Contreras and the Commissioner, we're going to do a presentation. So Deputy Contreras, if you want to.
Thank you, Chair. I will ask Tara or Commissioner McDonald to jump into the presentation quickly in a minute, but I just wanted to kind of speak to some of Legislator Walter's points. I think the main point on in-housing it at this point is that, given the scope of the need, we really wanted to be able to provide something that serves all of the school districts. And because of that, we wouldn't advocate at this point to hire. That would require us to hire 10 social workers in the county. And there's not really any way to hire people temporarily. So that's why we wanted to use the ARPA funds, which is meant to address critical needs that are related to COVID. And obviously the mental health issues have been linked to COVID isolation and sometimes loss of family members. And the funding is really meant to address these types of issues that are much more dire right now. We don't know if this level of need is going to persist beyond the next few years. And if they do, I think that we can all agree on ways to continue this program if it is, and then we would be able to tweak it at that point, whether it needs to change in scope or size or the delivery, whether we want to provide it in-house or continue it third party. But this just gives us more flexibility. So that is just the main kind of response that I wanted to give on that. But we do have a presentation just in case anybody hasn't had a chance to look at the backup. And so we can go through that and answer any questions.
Gerber Tills, do you want to wait for afterwards or do you want to go now?
That's fine. I can wait till after. I'll put my hand down.
Okay, thank you. So again, my name is Tara McDonald. I'm the commissioner for the Department of Mental Health. I'm going to share my screen and go through a really quick presentation. I know that some of you have already seen and heard this, so I thank you so much for your time and attention again. So this presentation is with regards to the implementation of mental health in schools program. Oh, dear. Sorry, I'm not advancing here. Okay. I'm sorry. Can everyone see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. So what you'll see here are just a few clippings, recent clippings of some events that have happened in our community, our wider community, our national community, and that have added to the stressors for our youth that make mental health supports for youth needed more now than ever. The range goes from youth that are struggling with depression and anxiety and stuck in emergency rooms seeking support, to gun violence and the fact that we have been in this prolonged state with regards to the pandemic and all of the stress that that's put on not only the youth, but the families within their with whom they're living with. So the stress of the family, their parents, their caregivers, all are transferred to our youth. They're feeling that just as much as their family and caregivers are. And it is quite a weight, and it's difficult to be able to carry that weight every day and be educated and go to school and attend. It's all very stressful. So our kids need our support in any way that we can give it to them. Locally in the county, what we're seeing is an increased number of single point of access or SPOA referrals for a connection to mental health support services in the community. There's an increased number of youth that are coming in terms of the referrals that are struggling with anxiety and school avoidance and not appearing at the school in order to be educated. And there's also a place where the kids are struggling with transitions from schools. And the transition that we're talking about are these developmental transitions that come between needing to go from elementary school to middle school to high school. All of these transitions are normal. They're a part of our childhoods. However, it also is a time of stress. If you've been in elementary school for 5 years, you know your teacher, you know your locker, you know this environment, and then to go into an environment that's entirely new, that in itself is a stressor. When you add everything else that's happening in our community, it just makes it unbearable, and our kids are needing our support. With regards to the program planning and the design process, in spring 2021, we initiated the planning process. We consulted our stakeholders, Dr. Corey, the BOCES superintendent, the pupil personnel staff from each district, and we had individual meetings between the department and the school districts. It was really important for us to speak to them from the ground level in terms of design to make sure that we're targeting the areas of concern that they believe that their students would be dealing with, and to make sure that the focus for the program will be able to remediate that targeted concern. There were more in-depth conversations that yielded the need to provide support, but not necessarily clinically in nature. one of the things that we heard from the school is that the schools and the school district is that they had the ability to be able to utilize their funding and get more social workers, that sort of thing. But many times it focused whatever resources they were putting focused on the school campus. Our kids are in schools most of the day. This is true. This is where they're spending a lot of their time, but they're also going back to the community. We wanted to be able to target that bridging effect that was needed, the bridge between the school campus into the community to make sure that the school day goes as well as it can. So this program was really to be able to meet with a teacher, but also to be able to meet with their parents in their home at their parents' work, or find a child's work in the community or something to do after school. It was really important that it wasn't just in the school building, and that was important for the districts as well. We developed an RFP and released it, and we did that all in conjunction with feedback from the school districts. The goals of the program are to be able to buttress existing services available in both school and the community, to provide intensive time-limited clinical intervention and care coordination to Ulster County students. It will be a part of the school community at each of our 9 districts and act as a link between school, community, and family. Services will be targeted toward middle-aged young people. Again, when we're looking at that transitions between middle school, high school, preparing them so that they feel confident and comfortable to be able to meet that developmental milestone. It will aim to promote overall wellness at school, home, build protective factors to offset the effects of trauma, and directly target social determinants of health to help make our community stronger. The staffing supports. It would operate in teams of 1 licensed master or clinical social worker or a licensed mental health counselor. It would have 1 case manager and work in dyads to support the youth and the families in the schools, youth and families and the schools, sorry. That support would come through weekly face-to-face sessions with the youth, family support sessions, ongoing communication and meetings with school staff as needed, linkage to community supports and resources for both the youth and the family, and coordination with other involved providers, including but not limited to mental health, juvenile justice, social services, and primary care. I wanted to go back to that linkage to community supports and resources. If one of the things is that a student is not doing well, but it requires a good amount of coordination between the family and the school, this service would be able to ensure that the parent gets to the school to have the conversation. Sometimes the support can be as concrete as helping to set up transportation or as grand as doing an assessment of a youth that is really in some sort of acute psychiatric crisis. Some of the activities and support, the teams will work with youth on goals related to mental health, to trauma, academics, community, vocational, family, housing instability, food insecurity, and violence at home or in the community. It really is support around anything that will impede on a youth's ability to be successful in school. Why now? So we're hoping to be responsive to the current need for greater mental health supports for youth. It meets the ARPA criteria as one of the primary categories of eligible use for SLFRF funds is public health, which includes behavioral health care. It supports households and communities impacted by COVID, and it serves underserved vulnerable populations. There's a wide community impact developed with wide outreach to all schools districts. It serves the entire county, and it strengthens vital public services, and it ties into our the development of our local child system of care and single point of access work. Approval is time sensitive in order to allow for sufficient time to plan for the fall launch. Stop sharing and answer any questions of me. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Bertos.
Thank you, and thank you for the presentation again. I just want to echo some of Legislator Walter's, if not all of Legislator Walter's concerns. I think the program as presented and as envisioned in the RFP is an excellent program, and I do think it's needed. And I don't think it's something whose need, unfortunately, is going to go away with the waning of the pandemic. I mean, I think our children need these services, and to have the county's mental health department working with the school districts is not only laudable, it's what I think we're here for. And so I applaud all of that. I just have strong concerns about $1 million spend on a one-year program without envisioning a permanence, which is what I think we should be doing. And I think we should be doing it through the budget cycle as part of really the reimagining of the mental health department. I mean, I was here when we outsourced it, and I applaud the creation of the department and having a bona fide director in Director McDonald. It's excellent. These are all the right moves. But I think as far as this program goes, that we should be making an investment in Ulster County, not as a one-year ARPA program. So I'd really like to challenge the department to go back and come back to us with what the program would look like as a permanently funded program through Ulster County Mental Health.
Mr. Walter?
Yeah, I mean, I would support that idea of really having this clear pathway. And I guess what I would say is I would like that. I would like to also add how we're going to, just to understand if they're given $1 million and they are not able to provide 10 social workers, which I'm pretty much, I will eat humble pie if I'm wrong, but I feel pretty confident they will not find 10 social workers given our current state. But how will we be doing this? There's been grants, like for example, family would get federal grants where they would, or state grants where they were only paid per child served. So like, how will we do that? Address the fact that if they do not provide enough services. So I'd like to hear what that plan is on expenditure. And what I would love to hear is if this organization has this kind of experience, then what I feel we can get out of them, because I don't think they'll be better at hiring social workers than we are, because we will have a better package, but they could provide us with what the model should look like. And so I do have no problem with the third party organization really helping us create the model that works. That I think we have more success in getting put together in the next whatever 6 months before our budget cycle, is that we're actually approaching the budget cycle with a really strong, robust model that would work and using their knowledge. But that would be what I would hope gets tied into this. If we are going to use them, then can they give us that kind of framework with the understanding that we would incorporate it into our county, and how that transition works with the existing social workers, the whole approach I would like to see as well.
Yeah, so on the adjustment piece, I think you're right that there's a crisis in attracting and finding behavioral health workers. And you had brought that up before. So we reached out. One of the ideas that you brought up was that we reach out to a university and see if we can get in place a partnership with an internship program. So we did do that. I spoke to Ohiro, the assistant dean at Adelphi University. He's very excited and is looking forward to next steps on this if it gets approved. I think I would like to kick it to Commissioner McDonald on how we would adjust the contract as well if they're having trouble finding people, because I know our mental health team oversees contracts all day, and so there's a lot of ideas for how we would go about adjusting that. But just to say, we would never give a nonprofit just the $1 million. It's always based on deliverables and the actual services that they're able to provide. And then lastly, on doing this in the budget process, it's just a concern that I've raised before, which is that if we wait to do that, I think we won't be able to get this off the ground until maybe mid-year next year, end of the year. And I think we're all on the same page that the need is just so dire. It is dire. And that is the point of COVID recovery funds, is to address these especially acute needs right now. But specifically to the contracts, Tara, could you chime in?
Absolutely. I did want to talk about the ability to pivot with and utilizing the contract as the way in which for us to have oversight about how the actual program is being implemented. We just stipulate in the contract how they're getting the money first. So it wouldn't be a matter of $1 million check to them at the beginning and then we hear about how it goes at the end. We're definitely doing disbursements, and they are responsible for giving in deliverables and data with regards to how many people have you served, how many lives have you touched. We're having conversations with the schools. We're making sure that we're putting together those linkages. We're participating in meetings as well. This is all a part of our responsibility as a local governmental unit to have really hands-on oversight of not just this contract, but all of the contracts that we have. So that's the first piece of it. The second piece of it is that unfortunately we've been going through this really challenging time in hiring staff. And so with the other contracts that we have, what we will do is that in these regular conversations, benchmark conversations that we have quarterly with each one of our contractors, we do go through the amount of folks that they have been actually providing the services with the what is in the contract. And a lot of times the connection in the decrease in the amount of services is due to not having staff. So we'll adjust the staff. And you had mentioned this earlier too, is that if our plan is to do five, but we're only able to, or five clinicians or 10, if we're only able to do five and 10 is what's in the plan, we readjust to make sure that we're able to have the program match what our staffing is, so that whatever it is that we're doing, we're making a difference. So that mid-step and pivot can only be done with having really close oversight, which is what we're responsible for and what we do generally.
Can I follow up?
Yeah, just
so is it your intention to make this a county program in the 2023 budget?
It's our intention to definitely utilize the pilot year to inform us about what to do moving forward.
Right. But however, you won't have time by the time we get to the 2023 budget. So I'm wondering if are you saying that you will not put it in for the, I just need to know whether you're seeing the integration of this into the 2023 budget. Because for me, there's a very big difference of us committing ourselves to $1 million to a third party organization that's not in Ulster County forever or for a long time versus this is really setting it up, but that your goal and expectation is that in this 2023 budget, we're going to see the segue of this. It might be that the positions roll, if this is going from September to, you know, whatever, June, because that's the school year, then maybe that is addressed where you're not paying for the full year of those staff. But I just want to know, is it your plan that in 2023, we'll see how this is going to be integrated as a county provided service, or will we see it as a line item that you're going to be to continue to contract with this organization?
So when you're saying 2023 budget, we're about to enter into that budget season right now. We don't have any information to be able to know that we would put it forward. We would really need the data from the pilot in order to be able to make that decision and have that go into the next budget cycle, I believe. But I don't know if we would be able to make a commitment to this one.
So you would lose a whole half year of no funding, because if this happens now, then you will have, I mean, are you then saying that this, is that $1 million supposed to carry you till December 2023, until right before 2024? Is that your plan? Is there going to be a gap in care?
The plan would be for this 22-23 school year.
Right. So what would happen September through December of 2023?
So by that point, we would be in the next budget cycle, the 24 budget cycle. Is that correct?
No. Well, no. I mean, you'll be talking about it, but you will right. not have the CARE. The CARE would stop from September to December 2023.
So if I could just jump in, there's always, I think in terms of sustainability, we're always looking at other funding sources. There's money coming from the state. They release RFPs kind of continuously. And then as far as I understand it, there's also a bipartisan deal that's in the works at the federal level around gun control. And a part of that is for mental health supports, as well as supports for schools. So we track all of that and we would be sort of putting that together as we see how this project rolls out to try to figure out how to continue it. Again, if we should continue it, what the shape should be, and all of those questions. But I think we would not, we haven't, you know, finalized this discussion or anything, but I don't think that we were thinking of putting it into the budget for this coming year because we are hoping that this will be a pilot program that we can then use to adjust.
So can I just like to make a motion to postpone this till next week with giving them time to think this through, because this does mean that for September through December, the service would stop. And
can you just hold that till, because Legislator Nolan has been patient. I was trying to let you close the loop, but let's hear from Legislator Nolan.
Thank you, Chair Guevaras. I agree with what's been put forward. I don't think it means we don't have any program in the fall of 2023. What makes the most sense is to budget for this. We're going to bring it into the county in 2024 when we have the experience from the pilot project and we know what we're doing. So by putting this forward now, my understanding, what I advocated in public health and carried the majority of the committee, is we need this now. And this is a way to bring it in with experienced people the soonest. Actually this fall. So we do that, we get it going, and then we get some experience, and then we decide what we're going to do for the 3 months of the fall in 2023. Other funding that would allow us either to hire a consultant for those months, which I think would be reasonable, or to try to stand something up within the county if it's a smaller program and we feel like we have the ability to do that. It's just not my experience that you can create a program like this with 10 people in 9 school districts and a supervisor and an entirely new curriculum or program in a couple of months. And so my feeling was that the argument that we should do this within the county is a very strong one, but we would have needed to have begun that a year or two or more ago in order to be ready to bring that into the school this fall. That didn't happen. No blame on anybody. It just didn't happen. Pandemic and all kinds of stuff. But at this point, to get a good, solid program in, and one we can get a lot of information from, I don't agree that we wouldn't be able to get, you know, feedback on what worked and what didn't work. We can do that with the, you know, we do that with all the consultants we hire on programs like this. So I think we need it urgently, and this is a way to do it, and we figure out how to keep it going forward next year when we know what we want, which isn't clear to me, and I don't know how it would be clear to others of exactly what's going to work well for 9 different school districts in the setting that we're in right now.
Chair Bartels?
I'll let Legislator Cahill go first because he hasn't spoken yet. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I just have a really quick question. Do we know if the ending of the school year impacts the implementation of this in any way? I know that a lot of teachers and staff take a 10-month year and take the summers off, right? So will that impact the implementation of this if we agree to it now anyway? And would it end up being pushed back to the fall in some cases? Does anyone know that?
It sounds like it is scheduled for the fall anyway. I don't think their plan was for it to start right away. I think it's to because by the time you execute all the agreements and get it lined up, it sounds like this is a fall.
This is my point, is that by the time you execute all the agreements and you have all the people who have to sign off and everything and make all the planning for it to start in September, will they be available to do that in the summer? I guess I should have phrased it that way. Thank you.
So the schools have been, I didn't want to make sure I'm okay to answer to that.
Please jump with the answer.
The schools have been waiting to be able to see the program come to fruition since we had started having those talks. So they're sort of poised to be able to enter and to have this process take hold. So I think that they would be available, at least the principal administrators that are required to enter into the agreements during the summer to be prepared for the fall. That was a part of our conversations and them being ready so that we could sort of strike while the iron is hot. So I believe that they would be available, but the school, the social workers, the teachers, those folks would be included when they're back in the fall. But the administrators could get started right away in terms of the agreement so that we can hit the ground running in September.
Chair Bartels.
Thank you. So I know that Legislator Walter was interrupted, but I would like to second the motion to postpone for 1 week and to continue the conversation. Again, I really want to reiterate that, you know, I would like to see this $1 million invested in Ulster County personnel and starting the program in Ulster County. I also would like to see the response to the RFP, which I've asked for and haven't seen yet. I've seen the RFP, what went out, but I don't know, you know, the responses and what the if someone's been chosen, what it is that they're actually specifically stating that they're going to do, other than what was in the RFP itself. And I know that there's nuance from one program, from one respondent to the next, which is how one gets chosen. So I'd like to see the selected RFP if that's happened as well in the interim week. But I really would encourage there to be a thoughtful dialogue about if there's a way, again, going back to what Legislator Walter said, where maybe we're working with an agency that's helping to define the programming, but that the personnel that we're hiring are actually Ulster County personnel within the mental health department, and we're building this program from the very first moments rather than deferring it as a one-year trial.
There was motion and a second to postpone for 1 week and more discussion. Let me just jump in real quick with a question so I don't forget it for next week. So I think Legislator Walter is 100% right. It's going to be near impossible to get the amount of employees that we would need to make this actually work. What is the plan if they're unable to do that? How are we going to choose which districts? And I don't need an answer tonight, but if there could be that answer for next week, I would appreciate it, because it's just, somebody's going to get the short end and they're not going to be happy. Legislator Walter?
Yeah, since we're making our list of things we'd like to know and tagging on to Legislator Uchitel's previous one, it'd be nice. I'd like to know what these social workers are going to be paid by this nonprofit organization to deliver this service. It might be in exactly what Legislator Bartels asked for. And then if you can also include, again, sort of the thought as to how we can integrate this best into the county, if that is truly your interest, how to deal with that. I'm very uncomfortable with the idea of a gap in service. It takes a lot of work to create these partnerships with schools, and to all of a sudden have 6 months without this at the end, if it is, assuming it goes so well, to then stop and have to restart seems not like a smart way to go. So if you can maybe talk together, and I'm happy to talk to you offline, how we could get this on the 2023 budget to have the continuity of service. Because I know from the ARPA group also, they saw this as seed money to for its sustainability and continuation. ARPA is not supposed to be one and done in that way, where if it's seed money, then it's supposed to produce a plant. And a plant doesn't just die for 6 months. And so would like to hear sort of that, how we're going to make sure that this, assuming it all goes well, will continue.
All those in favor, plus one to next week. Close. All right, motion carried. Thank you. 291, amending the county budget to use opioid settlement funding for mental health and school program. Can I have a motion? Mr. Walter, second.
Walter. Yeah, I'll just postpone this to for the 1 week. Reasons.
Okay, second on that. Chair Rickles, second. Discussion. All those in favor? Close. All right, I'll open. 292, confirming the appointment of the county medical examiner. Can I have a motion? Mr. Walter, second. Cahill, discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. 293, establishing and reporting standard work before elected and appointed physicians. Can I have a motion to postpone for 1 week? Chair Martell, second. Mr. Walter, discussion. All those in favor? Chair Bertels?
I'm just curious. We're postponing the standard workday. That's yep. They're going to be making amendments. Okay. No problem.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 299, authorizing the Commissioner of Mental Health Institute to renew an agreement with New York State Office of Mental Health for Community Mental Health Services grant. COVID relief.
I'll move it.
Second. Mr. Walter, discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 300, amending 2022 capital budget to accept allocation for APS funds for New York State Children and Family Services. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Mr. Walter, second. Martels. Mr. Cahill. Let's see if you have a discussion. No? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 301, amending the 2022 county budget to accept allocation of funds for temporary and disability assistance. Can I have a motion?
So moved.
Mr. Walter, second. Bertels, discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 302, authorizing the chair and the legislature to execute an agreement with New York State Office of Children and Family Services for Multidisciplinary Team Advocacy Center Program. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Senator Walter, second.
Bartels.
Bartels, second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 303, authorizing the chair to the legislature to execute a contract with New York State Department of Health and Rabies Program. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Mr. Walt, second. Cahill, discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 304, amending the 2022 county budget to reflect digital funding from Brighter Futures. Can I have a motion? Mr. Walter, second. Cahill, discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 305, approving the execution of a contract for 111,435 for Family Woodstock. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Our counts. Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 306, approving the execution of the contract for $69,557 for Family Woodstock. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Chair Martels, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 307, authorizing the chair legislative to agreement with NYSERDA for Clean Energy Communities Leadership. Can I have a motion? Chair Martels, second. Walter, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So carried. 309, amending capital projects 607, Government Operations Center. Can I have a motion? Discussions? Chair Martels, second. Walter?
Okay.
Thank you. There's a presentation that Deputy Executive Ryder, you want to jump in with that?
I think there's some members of this committee who have not seen this presentation, so I'll just introduce quickly Christopher Young from Urban Architecture,
and John Montaigne from GPI. I see Christopher is not on camera and I was on mute. Hopefully he is here. I mean, the other option, Chair Gavaris.
Mark, are you there?
Yep, hold on one second.
Sorry. Yep, I'm here.
I want to defer to you all on what you think. If you think the presentation makes sense tonight with two of the members not here, I know Legislator Fabiano has not seen it. If you're going to be voting on this tonight, that's one thing. If you're going to postpone it till next week, then maybe it makes sense to try to do the presentation then. I'll leave that up to you.
Yeah, I was going to ask for a motion to postpone it to next week, but Chair Bartow?
Before I will make a motion to postpone it till next week, and I think we could save the presentation for them. But before I do that, I'd like to make a motion to offer an amendment, which I'd like to get done this week, so it's in the packet. Natalie has the language. As she's sharing it, I'd like to add an additional resolve that requires a second appraisal and makes the sale contingent upon the second appraisal. There it is. Resolved that the acquisition of real property located at Paradise Lane as set forth herein shall be subject to the Ulster County Legislature's prior receipt and evaluation of a second independent appraisal, which is very standard in terms of commercial real estate. So I offer that as an amendment.
I'll second that amendment.
Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor of the amendment?
Oh, go ahead. One question. Yeah, who pays? Who pays for the second appraisal?
My understanding is that the legislature has money in its budget, and it's enough that it won't require full legislative approval. It's a small amount of money, so we can just take it out of our budget.
Okay, thank you.
Favor? Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you. And then now I'll make a motion to postpone consideration for a week, so that the other members can see the proposal.
Second. That's Peter Walter. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. So carried. Thank you. 311, authorizing the chair of legislature to amend the contract with New York State DCJS for alternative incarceration program. Could I have a motion? Legislator Walter, second. Chair Martels, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Carried. 312, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $53,388 for LexisNexis. Can I have a motion? Legislator Walter, second. Cahill, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Carried. 313, approving the execution of a contract amendment for rates to exceed $50,000 for Securus Technologies. Can I have a motion? Legislator Walter? Second, Cahill, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Chair Bartels and Legislator Cahill, I'm not sure if you're a yes or a no. Yes? Yes, okay. So moved. All right. 315, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $127,900 for Tyler Technologies. Can I have a motion? Chair Listed Walter, second Cahill. Discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? Gary?
Chair Gavaris, did you hit 314?
Nope, I did not. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Approving the issues of 314, approving the issues of contract amendment for rates anticipated to see $50,000 for Trinity Services Group. Can I have a motion? Mr. Walter, second. Mr. Cahill, discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. All right. 316. Authorizing chair. No, now you got me confused, Mr. Cahill. Where am I up to next, Natalie?
16.
Okay. I wasn't sure if I started it and didn't finish. All right. Authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with BOCES for intermunicipal cooperation for testing services. Can I have a motion? Senator Walter, second. Second. Senator Cahill, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 317, establishing capital project, 638, the Boysville substation building. Can I have a motion? Legislator Cahill, Walter, second. Have a second. Legislator Cahill, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 319, amending 2022-2027 capital improvement program, the number 584 bridge superstructure repairs. Can I have a motion? Mr. Walter, second. Mr. Cahill, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 321, approving the execution of a contract for $584,000 for HVB construction. Can I have a motion? Mr. Walter, second. 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 Cahill, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 322, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $63,000 for MJ Engineering. Can I have a motion? Mr. Walter, second. Cahill, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 323, amending the 2022 Ulster County budget for chips and paving money. Can I have a motion? Mr. Walter, second. Cahill. All of any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 324, amending the capital 2022-2027 capital improvement program, establishing capital project 637, the Creekside Drive Road Stream. Can I have a motion? Legislator Walter, second. Chair Bartels, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 326, amending 2022-2027 capital improvement program, establishing capital project 636, the DPW Salt Building. Can I have a motion? Legislator Walter, second. Chair Bartels, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 328, approving the execution of a contract for $174,519 for hybrid building solutions. Can I have a motion? Legislator Cahill, and second by Bartels. Any discussion? Legislator Walter?
Just curious. How is this, what is their hybrid of the hybrid building solution? Are they hybrid like solar oil hybrid, or are they hybrid like they got a man and a woman running it? what's hybrid about them? Anything interesting?
I am not aware. I mean, there are a low bidder, so I'm not sure the naming.
I was hoping it's environmental in nature. But not necessarily.
So they do lighter fabric, like lighter color. I know that's one of the issues with the fabric that we're having, why these need to be replaced. The roof fabric, I guess, the color that we have is causing leaks. And I believe this is a lighter color. So potentially that's more environmentally friendly.
Okay, just curious. Thank you.
Any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 329, approving the issues of a contract for rates anticipated to exceed $50,000 for LW Tree Service. Can I have a motion? Chair Bartels, second. Walter, discussion? All those in favor? Chair Bartels?
Thanks. I'm just curious. Does anyone know how we're progressing with the ash tree removal? I don't know if this is dealing with that too, but I know it's just been an ongoing issue.
Yeah, I mean, this is mainly hazardous trees over the right-of-ways. I think I'd have to have Brendan come in and, on one of the next meetings. I think we've done a lot on the ash trees on our county-owned properties.
So maybe just an update at some point, because, again, yeah. I know it's like epidemic proportions. There won't be any ash trees left in the U.S., they say, when this is all finished, but... they're also so heavy, so they do present danger.
Thank you. I also like to see how much of that contract is being spent on rail trails. How much of that contract is being used to clear trails trees along rail trails. Thank you.
Those in favor? Opposed? Okay. 330, authorizing the conveyance of county owned properties to original owners. Can I have a motion? Chair Bertels. Second, Walter. Discussion? Legislator Kate? No. All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 330, authorizing the Commissioner of Finance to accept bids for county owned property owned private sale. Can I have a motion? Legislator Walter. Second, Cahill. Discussion? Chair Bartels? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 332, authorizing the Commissioner of Finance to accept and reject bids for purchase of parcels from the auction on April 19th, 2022. Motion, Chair Bartels. Second, Walter. Discussion? Legislator Cahill?
Yeah, so I just want to reiterate what I said last time. Now, the county realized a tremendous profit from this. For the sale of properties based on the increased value of houses today versus the amount of taxes that were owed on them. I think there was one example where a property owner owned about $40,000 in tax and they ended up selling for $300,000 or something like that, right? And so to me, we have to, and I think I was tasked by legislator Walter to come up with a way to figure out a policy that would somehow prevent that from happening. I just feel terrible that the county's, you know, profiting tenfold, right, on someone else's home who couldn't afford to pay the taxes. And they surely would like that profit on the property rather than the county. They could use it, right? $260,000 isn't going to do much for the county, but that would change those people's lives, right? And so I really think that we got to put our heads together when we're dealing with a real estate market like we're dealing with now. And who knows if it will ever be this way again. We don't know that. But when we are in the midst of it, like we were this year, we really should have been a little bit more proactive in how we dealt with this and realized that these real estate transactions were going to generate a ton of revenue for the county, excess revenue, in my opinion, for back taxes. So I think we have to do a better job of that, you know, and I, you know, got scolded by or ordered by legislator Walter to try and figure out a policy. And I will do that. I will work on that. I just wanted to bring that up. Thank you.
I'll recognize the others, but real quick, I wanted to jump in and point out, because I've been through this with the finance department and with one of the previous deputy executives. This is the first time that we've actually turned a profit that I'm aware of. Overall, the numbers that I was shown is that we don't typically cover all of the costs. Now, if I was given wrong information, then that's I'm not very happy to hear that right now, but I guess I'll go to Chair Bartels then, because she's shaking her head no.
Well, it's my impression we regularly make a significant amount of money on these. I mean, I guess arguably if someone was factoring in staff time on, you know, the legal work that needs to happen to clear them, you know, maybe, but I mean, again, it's staff work. And I know that this is something that former legislator Rich Parody complained about on a regular basis, talking about the, you know, the fact that the county would make a profit without, you know, even reimbursing. At one point he suggested giving the property owner the difference of the back taxes and the cost to clear the title and giving the difference back to the property owner. And I think that there are circumstances where that happens. I mean, I would think it's important that we think about a policy, and I would definitely want to include in that conversation the ability to use these monies directly for housing initiatives, but also in the hope that we have a successful land bank application and that the properties are no longer going to auction for the highest bidder, but actually going to the highest and best use.
Right? I'd say Walter.
Okay. So I appreciate being reminded that I had told Legislator Cahill to no one's allowed to say something's a good idea on my committee without me telling them that they should then write it up. So that also reminds me that I think I also asked Legislator Erner to write a resolution because it was brought up very astutely. Also, the idea, well, in the discussion of how should we use this money? I mean, if it's $3 million above what we typically get, and the issue, not to steal the legislator's thunder, but this idea of can we use, when there is this excess revenue, to help people to maintain their mortgages as some kind of service to allow those who are at risk of foreclosure to offset that risk. So I think that's an important conversation to have also, is when we do have these increases, how should we use them? And I'm hoping that Legislator Erner may come with a resolution for us for next month also that talks about that, perhaps again developing a grant or support program for individuals who are at risk of losing their, you know, not being able to pay their mortgage. But maybe he has another idea as well.
Legislator Erner?
Yes, thank you. And I wanted to thank Legislator Cahill for introducing this topic, and Legislator Walter for reminding me about what we talked about. And I might speak further to this if this goes ahead on the floor this month.
Any other discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. Thank you. 333, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $60,000 for CB20 Inc. Can I have a motion? Chair Walter, second. Chair Cahill, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 334, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $89,752.85 for National Business Equipment. Can I have a motion? Chair Walter, second. Mr. Cahill, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 335, approving the execution of contract amendments for $44,870, causing the aggregate to be about $50,000 for Complete Building Solutions. Can I have a motion? Mr. Walter, second. Cahill, discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. 336, setting a public hearing on the sale or transfer of lands at 60 to 64 Voices Lane. Can I have a motion? Say Walter, second. Chair Martell's discussion. All those in favor? Opposed? So carry. 337, approving the execution of a contract for $80,000 for Artsman Hudson. Can I have a motion? Second. Okay. All those in favor? Any discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? 338, approving issues of contract for $25,000 for UPAC. No motion. Legislator Cahill, second. Walter, discussion? Legislator Walter?
Sorry. So, can I just understand? Typically, we would see these two under legislative programs and that whole long list. Maybe through the chair to introduce us to where these are coming from, and are we expecting other ones, and how the decision got made? Not that I'm not supportive of both of them, but.
So we know, because we no longer have a legislative programs committee, These two are contained in the budget, as are all the programs that were funded last year. And it's the expectation that all the programs from last year will be funded. The rest of the programs last year are going to be funded through departmental budgets in the executive's office, with the hope that they were transitioning to moving them to executive office regular budgetary items, some of which will require RFPs moving forward. It's something we've been talking about for a long time. These two were the two arts programs, so they were being run through our committee, as there isn't a standing department necessarily to deal with them. And then moving into the next budget cycle, there'll be a discussion about how we fund all these things, particularly the arts, through the committee that's charged with dealing with the arts. As far as the rest, again, many of them will be run as part of the executive budget.
Thanks for that. It does, now I do remember. I certainly would be supportive of these either running under, whether it's tourism or economic development, just going forward.
Yeah.
All those in favor? Opposed? So carried. Chair Rettos?
Thank you. Can I change my vote on 314, which is Trinity Food Services, to no, please? Thank you.
Does that change the it passing? No. Okay.
No, it still passes.
Comptroller Gallagher?
Yes, Chair. Thank you for giving me a moment to speak about our work in the Comptroller's Office. We released today a racial equity report for Ulster County. And those of you who didn't receive it, can access it on our website or just reach out to me. I'd be happy to share it. It was done in consultation with an advisory board of Black and Brown folks. And it covers a gamut of indicators. I think the message really is just that, Black and Brown people in Ulster County face the same challenges that they face everywhere. For me, one of the interesting things was that, the committee really wanted us, the advisory board wanted us to look at indicators that I wouldn't have expected and I wouldn't have looked at without their help. Things like, do Black and Brown families pay more for car insurance? And the answer is yes, they do. We used local data whenever available. But in some cases, there was only state or national data available. And I'm hoping that this will be useful for you and would be happy to present it in a more detailed form at some point. So I'm hoping that you'll take a look at it. With regard to real property, I wanted to mention that, we are continuing to finalize our draft report on the 701 property, 701 Grant Avenue and what happened there. And that will include a couple of draft policies that may help in avoiding the situation that we ran into this time, which is basically having a property not pay for many years their taxes while still continuing to take distributions out of the LLC entity from rental income for the members of the LLC. That being said, the policy doesn't cover the things that Legislator Cahill was identifying. And Legislator Cahill, I will share with you a draft of the policies that we've been looking at just to see if they can shed light on what you're trying to work on. And I also wanted to note, that we've been tracking the bids and the accepted bids per resolution versus the unpaid taxes per resolution over time. And I can tell you, Chair Gavaris, that according to the data we have, it looks like in every year but one since 2014, we've collected more than the back taxes and that were owed. And in 2020, obviously, we didn't have an auction to speak of. But and then the last thing I wanted to mention is just that we're working on finalizing a fund balance report. We closed out 2021 with a very large surplus, and we are way over the fund balance policy. So we want to give some feedback on potential options and a bunch of different reserve fund types that the legislature may want to look at going forward in the next year's budget, as well as some other opportunities, in terms of paying down debt or other things you could do with it. So happy to answer any questions on that. I know it's been a long night and you guys have caucus, but thanks for the opportunity to speak.
So can you send me that about the property? Because that was not what I was told by the former deputy executive. So I'm really annoyed right now. Thank you. All right, Legislator Walter.
Thanks. First of all, Comptroller Gallagher, I really appreciate that you did that study of for the Black and Brown community. I've always wondered, we have many in many of our contracts and agreements are that expectation for equal opportunity employing both women and people of color. And I was interested, it has always made me wonder how well are we doing on that? Is that, I started to look, but I had to pay attention to this meeting, so I didn't keep going. Did you look at all on our personal hiring practices in the county? Okay, great.
Yes, I did. And actually, I should have said this and I apologize. the one ray of good light is that actually the diversification of the workforce for Ulster County, we've seen a significant change just in the first year of the Ryan administration. And so, and I think the EEOC reporting that we do won't be finalized until later this year to look back on 2021, but just comparing 19 and to 20, there was a significant difference, and I expect it's going to continue into 2021.
Thanks. So, did you break it by industry? Like,
no, it doesn't break down by industry classification. You mean by job type? No.
Well, sort of, like, in terms of, even if you take legislative committees almost, like, in right. each area. So are they also doing the people who are paving the roads and the people who are all of the, is the diversity seen across? But you didn't get a chance.
I don't have an answer for that. I mean, the way these EEOC reports go in, it's by functional area. But even in the functional area, you can have somebody who's an administrator. And it does look at it both ways. We just didn't have time in this report. And I do think that would be a very interesting thing to look at. But we definitely noticed a significant change.
Thank you. Real quick, Comptroller Gallagher, did you compare Ulster County to other counties regionally and then at the state level, meaning Northeast versus Southwest and anything like that to see where we rank as far as that goes?
You mean workforce?
Yeah, workforce. As far as, you know, being underserved. So the black and brown communities being underserved in our community, having lower wages, paying more of their income to rent. Did you compare that to other counties around us or in the region? Okay, thank you.
No, there were so many indicators that we tried to cover. I don't know that we would have the bandwidth to compare every one of those indicators. And I think some of them, you'll see some are New York State, some are national numbers, and they aren't specific to Ulster County. But if there is an indicator that piques your interest that you feel like, I'd really like to know how we measure up to these other counties, I would be happy to take a look if there's something that we can dig in on. Yeah.
All right. Anybody have any other new business? No old business? Have a motion to adjourn? Mr. Walter, second Cahill. All right, next week's meeting, we're going to start at 5, just to give enough time. So all those in favor of adjournment? Okay. Thank you.
Bye.